You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
Hey, everybody. Today, I want to highlight a name that all of us know well, and that is our sponsor, Splunk. You need to keep operations humming around the clock, but potential disruptions are everywhere. Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues fast so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime. The world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. With Splunk, you can react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience. And we thank Splunk for sponsoring our show. In the complex world of enterprise identity, securing legacy web apps at scale can be daunting. Strata Identity makes it simple. With Strata, you can effortlessly integrate non-standard apps with any identity service, like MFA or SSO, with zero coding and zero hassle. Designed by identity architects for identity architects, Strata works with every vendor, standard, and app architecture. This means your apps can now speak modern protocols and integrate seamlessly with your chosen identity services. From securing on-prem web apps to migrating away from outdated identity providers or consolidating them, Strata helps you keep your complex access policies as you modernize your identity infrastructure and get rid of technical debt. Join leading organizations like 3M, Dallas County, and CIBC in securing your apps with Strata. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your identity security priorities, and receive a complimentary pair of AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Connect today at strata.io/cyberwire.
Courts, responsibilities, and liabilities, Chinese spies in the FDIC, and a cover-up? Industry notes, the world of cybercrime, Pokemon Go is almost everywhere, and it's dragging some bad actors in its wake. And in California, there's a bad robot. You know who you are, bot. I'm Dave Bittner in Baltimore with your CyberWire summary for Thursday, July 14th, 2016. Two recent U.S. federal court decisions may have significant implications for users of the Internet. The first decision of interest comes from the U.S. District Court for the Southern District of New York in Enigma Software Group USA LLC versus Bleeping Computer LLC. The court found that an online forum operator couldn't assert publisher immunity against the claim that a volunteer moderator allegedly defamed a security product in that forum. In the other case, the Ninth Circuit has handed down its opinion in Facebook v. Vicani, and some legal observers find the decision a disturbingly broad reading of the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act. The Volokh Conspiracy, writing in the Washington Post, thinks the opinion made the defendant's state of mind crucial as opposed to what the defendant actually did. As the conspiracy points out, quote, it says that if you tell people not to visit your website and they do it anyway, knowing you disapprove, they're committing a federal crime of accessing your computer without authorization, end quote. The decision also seems to make it all the more important to read the EULAs, the End User License Agreements, those notoriously lengthy, turgid, hard-to-understand things you click through when you download, Pokemon Go. As HelpNet Security remarked in a different context, quote, I agree to these terms and conditions is now provably the biggest lie on the Internet. Communications researchers at York University and the University of Connecticut used a test site to establish what everyone knows. Almost no one actually reads terms and conditions or privacy policies. The science is settled, end quote. The U.S. House Science, Space, and Technology Committee has looked into an apparent Chinese government hack of the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation and concluded that the FDIC was indeed compromised. And more seriously, committee researchers concluded that the agency attempted to cover up the incident. In industry news, AppThority raises $7 million in Series B, and Samsung takes a stake in UK cybersecurity darling DarkTrace. Investors continue to look forward to Intel's sale of its security business, even though they don't anticipate the company selling it for much more than it paid for it in the first place. In cybercrime notes, F-Secure reports that Lockheed ransomware is seeing a resurgence. PhishMe publishes more details on the rock-loader-delivered BART crypto ransomware. It's especially active in Germany, the UK, and the US. The cross-platform, Java-based AdWind remote access Trojan continues to spread rapidly. Zscaler reports that the Sundown exploit kit is pushing Rig and Neutrino for black market share left by the effective disappearance of Angler and Nuclear. Sundown is run by the self-styled Yugoslavian Business Network, pretty obviously modeled on the much better-known and notorious Russian Business Network. Much ransomware, of course, solicits payment in Bitcoin, but there's more to it than that. Cryptocurrencies are growing in acceptance. We spoke with Darren Stanchfield, the founder of KeepKey, a Bitcoin digital hardware wallet maker.
Bitcoin is a peer-to-peer virtual currency, and sometimes it's referred to as a cryptocurrency because it uses cryptography to secure it. But it could be thought of more as like a global ledger that resides on a bunch of peer-to-peer nodes. When you transfer money in it, you're not really transferring money, you're assigning value on the ledger. You don't have to accept identification from a customer. They can just give you the Bitcoin, and the Bitcoin is good. So you have the Bitcoin, you can verify that you have the Bitcoin. There's no chance of it being reversed on you. It's like cash. So once you have it, it's yours. So because Bitcoin is peer-to-peer, there's no central authority to reverse transactions. Once someone gets your private key and they make a transaction, they're gone for good, and there's no recourse.
One of the key features of Bitcoin is its baked-in security.
Let's say Bob wants to send Alice some money. He on this ledger, he creates a transaction that just assigns the value from his portion of the ledger to Alice's portion, and then he signs it, and he broadcasts that signature. And so everyone on the network can cryptographically verify that the transfer is authentic by Bob. So this block of transactions actually refers to the previous block of transactions, which refers to the previous block all the way back to the Genesis block, which was the very first Bitcoin block. And that's what you commonly hear as the blockchain. So to actually do a double spin on the network, you would have to override all the proof of work that ever took part in that blockchain. And that's why it's secure. It's not impossible to forge a Bitcoin, but it's mathematically unlikely.
So it's secure, but it's also not possible to get your Bitcoin back if it falls into the hands of bad guys or girls. As a Bitcoin user, you're assigned a private key.
And it's that private key is really what people think of as Bitcoins. So there's a couple different ways. You can store your private key on your computer, but then anything that's on your computer can get to your private key and then to your Bitcoin. So viruses, malware. And then, you know, what was common in the past was for people to say, well, good security is hard. I'm going to trust a third party to do it. So there's online wallets that will store that private key for you and kind of abstract that away where you just kind of have a web wallet. The last few years have been a move towards hardware wallets. And it's just about this idea of keeping private keys offline on an air-gapped computer. So this is really just like a personal HSM that keeps those private keys generated offline, and they sign transactions offline. And so there's no way to extract the private key once it's generated on the device.
If it all sounds a bit complicated, well, it is. But Stanchfield says one of the main benefits of a hardware wallet is to protect the user from their own mistakes.
With a hardware wallet, you guarantee that you have the Bitcoins, they're in your control, and that it's very hard to stray and leak your private key and thus your Bitcoins. But what the hardware does is it's so simple that it's really hard, difficult to do the wrong thing. You would have to go out of your way to do the wrong thing. You would know that you were doing the wrong thing, like sending Bitcoin to someone else.
That's Darren Stanchfield, the founder of KeepKey. The OurMine hackers, known for their skittish compromises of prominent tech executives with weak social media passwords, claim they've taken down HSBC servers in the US and UK. The bank recovered rapidly. It's unclear whether any customer service was disrupted. Pokemon Go, its privacy concerns partly addressed if you've updated and done everything else right, continues its long march through the internet. TechCrunch reports that the game already has more active daily users than Pandora, Netflix, Google Hangouts, and Spotify, and that it's installed on more devices than such popular apps as Candy Crush, Viber, LinkedIn, Clash of Clans, and Tinder. This is of security interest, not only because of privacy issues, but due to the number of malicious apps trying to ride Pokemon Go's coattails. That number is exploding. Finally, we hear that out in, where else, Palo Alto, a security robot in a mall knocked down a toddler. The small boy wasn't injured, but he cried a lot. So, we have a clear violation of Asimov's first law of robotics. We mean, come on, it's not Skynet, but hey, robots, you're supposed to observe and report. Leave those poor kids alone. And I'm joined once again by Dale Drew. He's the Chief Security Officer at Level 3 Communications. Dale, you know, we toss around a lot of terms here on the CyberWire podcast, and we talk about 0 days, we talk about half days, but we don't often stop to take the time to explain what we mean by those. I was hoping maybe you could explain to us, what are we talking about when we talk about a 0 day or a half day?
You know, the security industry has its own dictionary, and that dictionary is growing on a daily basis. You know, but 0 day and half day are terms where, you know, a 0 day is an exposure that the industry is not yet aware of. It's typically where a bad guy has gone through the source code themselves, have identified a weakness in that source code, and then they utilize that source code to weaponize it into an exploit or an exposure. A half day is, ironically enough, an exposure that the industry is aware of, but has not yet patched it or has no immediate plans to patch it. You know, a lot of vendors will take bugs or bug reports from the industry or from their own organization, and they will prioritize those bugs to determine at what point that they're going to introduce them as a fix. So, you know, bad guys will monitor those open forums of people talking about bugs they've seen. They will then identify if they can weaponize those into exploits or exposures. You know, the average 0 day gives an intruder about 10 months of undetected access to an enterprise. And the average half day gives an intruder about 8 months of undetected access to an enterprise. So they're both very, very valuable commodities, you know, in the industry.
And then when we shift from 0 days and half days, and we're talking about APTs or advanced persistent threats.
Yeah. So, you know, a bad guy, right, identifies a half day or a 0 day, and then he weaponizes that into an exploit or an exposure. And then what he does is that he can then create a package that will load or install that exposure on a victim, and then have the ability of staying persistent or resident on that computer for some extended period of time without being detected, as an example. That is what we call an advanced persistent threat. It's the ability for an exposure to stay resident on a compromised computer and do its activity, collect keystroke data, download proprietary information from the company, and send it to the bad guy without being detected and persisting for some extended period of time.
Do we have any sense for how long a typical APT rattles around inside someone's system?
You know, the average that's the industry average has been around a year to a year and a half. And so, you know, to sort of put that in context, you know, a bad guy essentially has access to your enterprise with the same level of access as most of your enterprise users for a year and a half. And that gives them the ability of downloading data. That gives them the ability of monitoring keystroke data and passwords of all the employees. And, you know, and the theory goes that the reason why that it lasts for a year to a year and a half is because once the bad guy has gotten access to pretty much all the data that they believe they need, then they get a little bit more sloppy in how they're managing that access and that system, and they then become more detectable as a result.
Dale Drew, thanks for joining us.
Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging and time-consuming. Enter Vanta. Vanta gives you one place to centralize and scale your security program. Quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more. You can leverage Vanta's market-leading trust management platform to unify risk management and secure the trust of your customers. Plus, use Vanta AI to save time when completing security questionnaires. CyberWire daily listeners can get $1,000 off by going to vanta.com/cyber. That's vanta.com/cyber.
And that's the CyberWire. We are proudly produced in Maryland by our talented team of editors and producers. I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening.